basis of the dissertation is the idea of free will as a basis for economic choice. Because economics is, and I'll get a little bit into it here, the idea of people making choices. But my dissertation, the focus of that aspect is that you can't have free will from an atheistic viewpoint. So if you're going to be an atheist, and a lot of the main Austrians, I don't know about Karl Menger, but Rothbard was an atheist, Mises was an atheist, Hayek was an atheist, Ayn Rand was an atheist, right? She's not Austrian, but they all believed in free will. They all believed people had free will, but there's no basis for free will if you're just a meat machine, right? So I don't know if you're familiar with Jay Richards. He's a fellow at the Discovery Institute, teaches at Catholic University. I met him at a thing that they had at SPU back in July, and he does a little bit on this as well. And I'd already written this paper, but then I met him, and I watched a talk he gave at the Acton Institute, which is why libertarians need God. And it's a great talk, so if you're interested in that, I recommend it on YouTube. It's about an hour. And but I'll get into this. So the idea here I have is, again, free will is as a basis for economic choice. And like I was saying with that, the basic paper that I'm presenting at the Libertarian Scholars Conference is that libertarians and economists need a theistic worldview to be a consistent libertarian, consistent economist. So I'm going to get into that a little bit in here. So this is the first time I've done any presentation work with this paper, but it should be fun. This is kind of the tagline I've always had in my head, right? It's on the eighth day, God said laissez-faire. And that is, I think, the biblical basis for human action, which is basically what economics is. Von Mises is one of the biggest players in the Austrian economics world. And his book, his foundational book, is called Human Action. Right? So, this thing from Sir Francis Bacon said, "It's true, a little philosophy inclineth man's mind to atheism, but depth in philosophy bringeth man's mind about religion." And my own twist on that is, a little religion inclineth man's mind towards socialism. You know, the whole idea of we got to help our neighbor, and so I don't want to help my neighbor, so I'll make government help me. I'll make my neighbor help my other neighbor, right? That's kind of what socialism is in the real world. But depth in biblical Christian philosophy brings man's mind about to a capitalist worldview, and really more specifically a market worldview, like a free market where individuals can make choices. Again, there you go, there's that choice thing, right? And so I have a little definition. I think Phil would agree with this, and this, I think I got it from Frank Turek. I'm familiar with Dr. Turek. And you have this single God, creator, sustainer of the universe, distinct from, separate from the creation, existing outside of time, space, matter, but still involving himself in it. So, two here that I kind of touched on. There's a correct and a best way that a thesis, specifically the Christian, should view economics and the economic worldview, interactions through a theistic worldview. And the theistic worldview is the best, and the are those who view it through a theistic worldview are best able to consistently view such economic and human actions because of their foundation in free will and the foundation in the individual. I mentioned Ayn Rand. I think I've got her later. She was very anti-religion, anti-Christianity, because she saw Christianity as God. Well, a lot of libertarians see God as this tyrant telling you what to do, right? Now, we understand it differently, but she even said she saw Jesus as the first major person on the world stage to recognize the individual, the existence of the individual, and basically the individual in any way, shape, or form, really. So, here, I mentioned man, the meat machine, right? So from an atheistic worldview, you're just a product of random changes. I'll get into what thoughts are, things like that. But humans are just machines. They are products of cause and effect, and anything that comes out of you is not, it's not really you, it's your natural reaction to something else. It's like when I hit you, I hit you in the knee and you kick out, right? You're just reacting, you're not choosing to kick, but you hit your funny bone, your arm. It was the Seinfeld. I always refer to Seinfeld in my own classes. Nobody understands it because it's before their time. But there was the one where George hit his elbow, and he was faking it initially, but then he went to the doctor, and as he got up to leave, he actually did hit it, and so he had this, like, he was always jerking, right? His elbow was doing that all the time. So, but you know, the atheistic worldview consistently stated is that is what you are. Right, things come in and I don't know if they'd say noises or whatever comes, it hits you, and you just react. You don't choose what you're doing, you just react. You're a machine. So you have B.F. Skinner, Beyond Freedom and Dignity. He called human behavior, human nature, pre-scientific. Right, so the idea that there was such a thing as human nature. We have Freud. He said that human nature and the things would eventually be fully described by the natural workings, again, of the brain, right? And the brain is just a physical thing inside your head full of chemicals, and chemicals act, and they don't really act, they just react.
They respond to.
Right? And so, you can, you know, what's his name said, the devil made me do it? Well, you could say, my brain made me do it. So, you know, Dr. Phil talks about if he went out and kicked your kid on his way out of the church, you wouldn't be happy about it, but he could. My brain made me do it. It's not my fault. I didn't choose to do it. Right? Because there is no such thing as choice. So remember that when I kick your kid out of the way.
Would you please? We'll be here later. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay. So, again, Skinner and Freud, they claim man is a result of purely scientific processes, and many today refer to as that meat machine. And so, again, Jay Richards speaks of the meat machine.
One thing you can inject in that when you talk about this concept is that, you know, the DNA has within it programming. I mean, you end up with, like, bees, ants, hive creatures. You know, they come out of they're hatched, and they go to work. They're already trained. The DNA has that training, so you could argue the atheistic worldview is a lot of that what people do is the same as hive creatures.
So animals have a nature and instincts.
And that's programming within their DNA.
Yeah, now the question is, what makes man so different? Right? Because we're just animals. And so I get into a little bit in the idea of reason. You know, reason doesn't really exist. In fact, I have a comment from, well, I've got it later in the slide, but reason is just it's a white man's creation. Right, it's a creation of the white man. And that was according to...
Should I be offended? Oh, wait, I'm a creation of a white woman. Never mind. Okay,
reason is the idea of reason is just suppression of people by white supremacists, right? That's basically kind of what he's saying.
Oh.
And so it's a very famous guy, and I forget his... Caputo, I think? Yeah. So I've got it in the slide there later on. But... So, you know, what is economics itself? So, economics there's different views of what economics is. I, as in Austrian views, economics is more human action, how people behave, and almost like sociology, psychology, things like that, in my own view. Other people view it as kind of more as what I think a consistent atheist might say, as mathematical models. You know, you plug elements in, and you get nice, simple equations, and nice outcomes that spit out. But that's not reality, right? I mean, we know that's not reality. That's partly why behavioral economics is gaining ground. So, social science, natural science, data collection, there's a lot. You got long-term capital management, the NBR paper 99 that created the idea that it's a little bit off, but it's more about data collection and getting rid of risk and all that. You've got Hayek, he speaks of scientism, and the study of society, scientism. I'll get into that a little bit, I think. So, this is kind of towards the success of the scientific method in other fields of natural science led to researchers in those fields seeking to apply not just natural science, but people in sociology and specifically economics trying to apply what they've gotten from the natural science, from the math field, and from science, biology, and apply that to the social sciences, and you get this idea of scientism. And so Hayek wrote a bit about that. And he saw it as the most problematic application. So there's some Homer Economicus. It's a funny book. If you're a Simpsons fan, I recommend it. And what it is, it's Economics of the Simpsons, right? And it goes through the older, when the Simpsons were good. So good Simpsons episodes. So I think everybody here is old enough to know what the Simpsons are. I grew up on them, so. So critical and comparing costs and benefits, and you have the economic man, which is this perfectly calculating individual, and it's not reality, right? But it's like an ideal economist or something. So, and so what Austrian is it's based in this idea of praxeology, and that is humans act. And again, the very basis of Austrian economics is humans act, which is kind of that humans choose to do things. But I get back to the idea that where do you get this idea that humans choose to do anything if they're just meat machines? So, and again, so we've got Tom Woods. He's a PhD Columbia historian, but he's got a lot with the Mises Institute. He's an excellent economist. He wrote a book called Meltdown, and that was kind of my main introduction to him. He wrote it, 2008 he wrote it on the financial crisis. So if you're interested in the financial crisis, it's called Meltdown by Tom Woods. And Austrian economics relies on the idea of free will, the ability for individuals to choose, and free will requires an atheistic worldview. And a theistic worldview leads to individualism and free markets. So there you have a bunch of implied, this implies transitivity. So some of the problems that I do see, and I'll kind of go over this a little bit, specifically with Christianity, and I'm going to get into socialism and the big push for, I was first introduced, I have it in a later slide, just the idea of the My Brother's Keeper, so the Objectivist Societies, the Ayn Rand Society, and he spoke at UW several years ago, and he complained that he thought the whole problem with socialistic government today was Christians in the early 20th century and the My Brother's Keeper, and I thought that was ridiculous because the world today is not, you don't see a lot of Christianity in government. Not even fake, right? And there was a Barna poll, 14% of polled people who said they believed in Jesus, or believed that Jesus would favor socialism, or sorry, capitalism, while 24% believed Jesus would favor socialism. This is the first Jesus was a socialist, Jesus was a communist, right? Very poor understandings of both Jesus and what socialism and communism are. Yes. Dr. Phil says people say socialism is caring, right? It's just caring.
What about the other 68%?
Yeah,
they were probably undecided.
They were sleep. They were sleeping.
This was a, I don't know.
Yeah, they were sleeping.
They were clueless.
Yeah.
Well, no, 24% were clueless. The other people, at least they held off.
Do you know when that poll approximately was?
I think it was. When was that? I can get that later. I think it was 2000 something.
Oh, okay. So. Not like 70s or 80s.
No, it was much more recent. Yeah, and in 2001 you have, this is in Tom Wood's book, is The Church of the Market, and it's a Catholic defense of the free market, and he's got a lot of quotes from popes and things in there. 2001, 250 Christian seminaries in the U.S. place the heaviest emphasis on social justice and economic issues are found to be the most hostile to the free market. Shocking, I know. But right. So these are three main movements, and Tom Woods in that book, he talks about the kingdom of God in the 20th century, and there's like McGovern, somebody calls him the founder of the modern Christian socialism, I forget the exact name, but and so not Ray McGovern, what's the guy that pushes
Jordan McGovern.
George McGovern is the guy, right?
The politician.
That I'm talking about here.
Are you talking about the politician?
From the 50s, 60s.
Yeah, yeah. George.
George McGovern.
Yeah.
Heavy socialist.
Yes.
Although there's a follow-up story on him. I don't know if you've heard about that. His setting up a bed and breakfast. He wrote an editor. He wrote a letter to the Wall Street Journal where he basically, after he got out of politics, he set up a bed and breakfast and tried to run the bed and breakfast.
Yeah, I did hear about that. And then he complained about all the policies he's been pushing for and making his life.
He didn't realize exactly. It was a fascinating letter. And then he's tried to repudiate it, but it's stuck around because he's basically saying all these wonderful things, it makes businesses unworkable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this is the big one around here is the minimum wage, the living wage, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Living wage. So, if you're interested, it's called, I think it's called BernieSandersIsWrong.com. It's a Tom Woods book, and it's a bunch of his podcasts in written form, the transcripts from different things Bernie's pushing for, the living wage. And he goes into the idea of a living wage. You know, I tell my students, like, here, you have kids, married, no kids, anything, anybody married with kids, so married with kids, you know, so these people, they have heavy needs, not a lot of time. You're young.
Yes.
You have no kids. Lots of time. So you work 60 hours. You could live on $30,000 a year. They have kids. They work 20 hours, and they get $100,000 a year. That's fair. That's called equality, right? Because to him with ability, from him with ability to them with need. And that's only right, because they don't have the kind of time that you have, and they have more needs, and so it's fair.
No.
Right? They get paid way more, work less.
No.
Work more, pay less.
Which motivation to get married, have a lot of kids, and work less.
Yeah, and then also, if we paid everybody, if we had like a minimum, everybody got paid the same, this is kind of the contradictory problems, everybody got paid the same, then a living wage, then somebody with like 12 kids, living wage to a person with 12 kids is quite a high salary, and we're going to pay everybody that, and so what's going to happen is the people with no kids are going to go to that person, hey, go, you know, go have a romantic weekend with your wife. Go have three more kids so we can get a raise. You know, so because everybody, because then their cost of living is going to go up, and you have to pay everybody
the
same
amount.
Wow, that
poor wife.
So in there, they go into how the longer story of how contradictory those ideas are.
Adopt.
So why some of these are a problem? You've got an intellectual and ideological roadblock to a lot of people. And, you know, libertarians tend to be atheists. Part of it is because they see Christianity as a socialistic worldview. Individuals motivated by socialist ideology, if they see Christianity as a socialist institution, then they might go and enter it and try to make it more socialist or communist or something, right? You've got a lot of biblical ignorance, and it's not to say but you know, I think people inside and outside the church are pretty ignorant of both the Bible and the economic worldview. And so when you don't know much about either one, and then you go and call yourself a Christian and say, you know what, we should help people. Jesus liked, they shared, therefore, socialism, right? I think I've stated it pretty clear there, as far as their worldview,
yes.
Confusing as it is. And then you've got the idea of who is your God, right? Here, this is real. In Venezuela, they took the Lord's Prayer, the Lord being Hugo Chavez, and they said, "Our Chavez, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." Right? And so they substituted his name into the Lord's Prayer, and they basically prayed to their God, Hugo Chavez, and after all, he made... He brought heaven to earth in the form of Venezuela, and now it's a paradise.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, come on, he took over the oil wells, he's taking care of everything for them.
Yeah, it's great.
As long as you're in line with his will.
I mean, you know, major Hollywood leftists, socialists, were touting Chomsky, Noam Chomsky. Chomsky, meant the monkey they named after. But Chomsky... He was him, and what's his name went down there, and called him his good friend Hugo Chavez, and they were all praising what a paradise and proof that socialism works. And, you know, of course, the problem is they were taking the money from the oil fields instead of reinvesting, they were just spending it. I say, imagine you drove Uber and all you did was put gas in your car. Yeah, you could get around for a while, but after like 20,000 miles of not changing your oil or fixing your brakes, your car is going to start to break down. And then it's going to be really expensive to fix. and they don't have the money to fix it. And you know, they've got massive oil leaks. Their lakes are just toxic because the pipes are corroded. But you know, why when you're having so much fun, why stop and actually fix anything? So they don't have the money because they can't even pump the oil because they don't have electricity. Right? So they said, oh, it's because the oil price crashed, and that's why. Didn't happen anywhere else. Yeah. Nobody else went into total collapse. Saudi Arabia, they didn't go into a total collapse state. But so socialism is antithetical. Jesus was one of the first teachers to proclaim the basic principles of the individual, of individualism, Ayn Rand. And then she went on, this is in a letter she wrote to somebody, and then she went on to say why. She didn't believe in Christianity because she believed it was the love your neighbor as yourself or treat your neighbor as you wish you would treat you is to subjugate yourself to your neighbor's desires. That was her view. Libertarians and atheists, so this is a research institute, the PRRI, who does stand for 22% of libertarians versus 52% of Tea Party members consider themselves part of the religious right or conservative Christian movement. So if you look at the conservative versus the libertarian, libertarians are, what's her name? Used to say, years ago, they used to make fun of libertarians as people that just wanted to smoke dope and have homosexual marriage, right? And that's, you know, I don't necessarily disagree because there are a lot of them. David Bowes, head of the Heritage, David Bowes is head of the, it's a massive organization, and he came and spoke in Seattle, and I said, you know, I was like, I said that to him, and that I said marriage was never really illegal, so I don't know how this law made it legal if it wasn't illegal. You know, Seinfeld, they had an episode where they went to a gay wedding in the 90s, right, when it was supposedly illegal, but there on TV, they're talking about going to a gay wedding, so people have been gay married for decades.
Yes. Right? Way back into the Romans times.
Yeah, but he was like, oh, well, what about this case in Texas? Now, if I'd really thought about it, I said, well, I didn't realize. There were two people that were, the police went and they had this anti-sodomy law in Texas, and it was a big famous case. It was more politics. But I should have said, well, oh, sorry, I didn't realize they were getting married in their bedroom. But, you know, but I think they were doing something else, and it was just. Obviously a big case that they wanted to set precedent and all that stuff. But these are just some of the numbers. Libertarians versus that never attend religious service, 41% think God is either an impersonal force or, you know, a lot don't think he even exists. You've got the LP, which is just a horrible organization. Gary Johnson, you know, he told Christians just bake the cake. You know, Nazi. He said just Jews should bake that Nazi cake and government should make them do it. And he was he said he was 73%. He was trying to court Bernie supporters, and his VP was campaigning for Hillary. So while he's supposedly running for vice president as the LP, he's out there campaigning for Hillary. And now he's going to be the LP candidate in 2020 probably. I hope so, because I think that'll push a lot of people out of that party. So... you've got the war on poverty is, you know, this idea of doing good Christian things. A great book on that, and I'll say it again in a later slide, is Arthur Brooks, Who Really Cares? It made him famous. He spoke at the WPC, Washington Policy Center. He spoke at their dinner 2 years ago, gave a great speech. He's got a Conservative Heart, I think is his book, recent one. But he's got a book that made him famous, sort of. It got picked up on Stossel. It's called Who Really Cares? And it's all sorts of data on who really cares about the poor, who really donates, who takes money out of their own pocket. And what he does, he goes in there and he shows that people that have more of a big government view are approximately 1/6 as willing to give money out of their own pocket because they view government doing things that they think that really they should do, right? And individual responsibility is something I'll get into in a little bit too. But the war on poverty has just been a total travesty. You've got $1 trillion a year. That's $20,000 per poor person, spending up 900% since the Great Society, right? The war on poverty. You've got statistics hide the full cost not only the war on poverty failed, it created economic and social problems worse than those it was meant to solve. You know, you've got people like radio host, I forget his name now, but actually, your favorite economist, Thomas Sowell, right,
or
Walter Williams.
Walter Williams.
And they talk about the effect that, this has had on the black family unit, going from 22% unwed mothers to 73%.
75,
right? And that's because the state, the state, you know, women now are married to the government as provider. And remember, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. They came in a little bit.
Yeah. They came in and promised
to
take care of them.
Give us this day our daily bread.
Yep.
Well, now it's our government who are in Washington. And actually, I think this it was an actual kind of parody that somebody created. It's our government who art in Washington, hallowed be thy name. And, you know, give us this day our daily bread. Right.
And so, it was a Democrat politician, Moynihan, Daniel Moynihan, who in the 60s wrote about the decline and what would happen. And he was prophetic.
Yeah, and you know, anybody, I mean, you could have seen this. Like, if it's basically a lot of economics is incentives, and if I pay you to do something, Ron Paul was famous for saying, two laws of economics, if you tax it, you'll get less of it. If you subsidize it, you get more of it.
Yeah.
Right? If I gave you all $20 to run around the building, you might do it, right? And if I said, okay, if you're going to stay here, you're going to have to give me $20, you're going to stay in this room, you'd all leave.
Exactly.
So, if I tax you, you're going to not do it, and if I subsidize you, you're going to do more of it. So, and, you know, actually, socialists believe that the existence of private, just the existence of private charities prove that society is unjust.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's Arthur Brooks in his book. He quotes the Nader. Ralph Nader was one. He believed that. That because private charities means there's poor people, and poor people are proof that society is unjust. Right? And so, again, we need bigger government and more handouts. And more, we need a bigger war on poverty, I guess. When the government goes to war on anything, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, it never wins.
Nowadays, when the government goes to war on a nation, it's not even a good thing, right? It doesn't even win those anymore.
They create what they go to war on.
Yeah.
Usually.
What?
They create some of the things they actually didn't make to put a
war
on them.
They created more poverty.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes, we did.
War on crime.
On drugs. None of these
drugs,
things. None of
more
it
drugs has ever been. You know.
More drugs.
Never. And it's because of the incentives, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get a war on something, you make it illegal, you tend to raise the price, and you've got people that think, oh, you know, it's illegal, maybe I should
You trigger a bigger head of people. Now you got to create more people to work on it. And now these people need money. So now most of the money is going to these people who are creating the red tape.
Someone who knows the rules.
I'm not big on the... I've never smoked. I neither smoked nor inhaled.
Good thing.
Norm MacDonald, he was talking about Clinton. It's like doctors say, no, Bill, Mr. President Clinton, you must inhale. That's how it works. Now that it's legal, right?
Yeah.
As a medicine.
Well, he can inhale all he wants.
But, so, this is, again, Arthur Brooks. A significant number of Americans consider themselves charitable simply because they support government-forced redistribution of other people's money via government taxation welfare. Not surprisingly, it has a negative effect on private donations. Right? So there's a crowding out effect that as government gets more involved, people get less involved. Because, I was going to help that person, but there's government to help them. It's not my responsibility anymore.
It's prime the church is that way.
Put a D on your word. No, actually, you need it. D on crowning.
Crowning, not crowning. Crowning. Okay.
Crowing versus crowning.
You need a D.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I will have to fix that. Typo.
It's okay. We still love you.
So, more on charity there. Got it in your notes. This is the crowding out $7,500 reduction in charitable giving for every $10,000 in government grants. Right.
There's another bullet you might put up there is that each year we get less and we have to have a greater proportion to deduct. Where 4 years ago, your deductions, you got a much bigger break on them.
Oh, you mean for
tax purposes.
Deduction for charitable purposes.
Yep.
Yeah. So, as far as Christian socialism, you know, you've got... I looked at Travis McMakin. He teaches theology at, I forget where, but he wrote a book on Helmut Gollitzer, and I don't know who that guy was. Apparently he's influential in the
social.
But he calls him, he was a socialist, he was a Christian. Perhaps surprising thing, at least for deeply embedded in white American, there you go, white American Christianity again, therefore I must be wrong. Gollitzer was a socialist because
darn
he was,
it!
So let's all turn around and listen to the one.
The one person who's correct.
The one correct person that has any value.
Dang, you know, I just, all these years I served the same God with you. I didn't know it was yours, but it was ours. Then we gotta listen to you
only.
For
the purpose of this talk, I identify as. So McMakin defines socialism as the attempt. Now, I think this is obviously ridiculous. You know,
yeah.
Bastiat said socialists want to play God. Socialists look upon people as raw material to be formed into social combinations.
That's true. Right. That's very true.
Now, the problem with socialism is owning the means of production. What are the means of production? Well, they'll say the non-human land, labor, capital. But the reality is it includes the human land, labor, capital. Socialism is the collective ownership of you.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a... I have it here. Rabbi Zacharias had... The famous one when the guy came to Jesus and he said, whose mark is on you, right? And was the one, but should have said, who owns you, right? And so here in China, you have this. This is out of Planet Money. They talked about, this is a farmer called The Document That Changed China. It was about the first idea of property rights coming into China. Very poor. Back then, they talked about one straw belonging to the group. Nobody owned anything, right?
Utopia.
In fact, so much so that in a meeting with high-level Communist Party officials, the farmer asked, well, what about the wheat stock? Like, the head, the very little grain in the head of wheat, and the Communist Party says, oh, that's collectively owned. Well, what about my teeth? Do I own these? No. Your teeth are collectively owned, right? So that's true. Social, that's where it goes to. It always goes to that.
Work
so they understood what socialism was and how it works. The collective, which turns into what the government, right, owns the people. And they treat them accordingly. You look at North Korea, and there's a book called Dear Reader, you know, kind of play on Dear Leader, not blanking on his name, but he went there and he said, if you go to North Korea, you could kill somebody and the government wouldn't care. The only time you get in trouble with the North Korean government is when you like the guy that was killed, the student that was there.
Yeah.
He took down propaganda, right? And you have another guy that was a former American military in the Korean War, and they don't like that, so he was kept there. And you have the pastor that was right. So if you kill a North Korean citizen, it's kind of like if I went to your house and I broke one of your glasses, right? You're like, oh, that's, you know, problem. I'm like, hey, sorry about that. Let me pay a fine. Right? That's basically all you do in North Korea because the people are just cattle.
Yep.
You know, other crazy things about this, Mao's great leap forward, we shall teach the sun and the moon to change places, create a new heaven and a new earth. The goal is to create not only a new man, but an entirely new world. You know, that's why the human nature is the problem often with socialism. So what do? You have re-education camps. Change their nature, right? So, but the Christian view is life, liberty, and property do exist. You do have a property, right? You can't collectively own everything. Not only does it mean that you can't own yourself anymore, but, and it leads to the other problems I talked about here, but it's an abolition of the basic right of property. And you look at, you know, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal. Well, if you don't own anything, that's not a problem, right? That, don't covet your neighbor's wife. Well, wife doesn't belong to my neighbor, so, right? His wife belongs to me, and my neighbor, and my other neighbor, right? We all own his wife, collectively, so you'd share, I guess, if you want. But, you know, nobody's okay with that. Even the socialist is not okay with that.
Well, they think the wife.
They wanted to abolish the idea of marriage and individual ownership. That was the idea that women would be shared around.
And they totally abolished the entire idea of family. Like, if you want true equality, if you really want equality, it's not fair that some parents are better. Right? That's just not fair. So what we need is a brave new world where the government raises your kids in these state-run institutions, and they're all raised equally. Right?
That sounds like the schools in America now. I'm sorry, inside voice.
Except they would no longer be able to come home after school.
Some parents wouldn't complain about that.
Yes, I wouldn't. Sorry, but, you know, rights are a natural thing. The Bible talks about rights. You know, Peter, the famous case where Ananias and Sapphira, and Peter says, look, the property was yours.
Exactly.
You could have done what you wanted with it. It belonged to you.
Yep.
The problem was not that you didn't give it away, is that you told everybody you did.
You lied to the Holy Spirit, yes.
Right? Yeah. And J. Vernon McGee talks about how the real problem here was a precedent. It was setting a precedent to tell future believers that you really should give all of your stuff away to the collective, right? But that's a thing. And then people that don't are going to be looked down upon. But that's not the way the church should work.
No, that's not how the interpretation should have been.
Close.
So.
Yes.
Capital Doodle. I'm going to quickly. You know, Justin John Roberts, mm-hmm. we talk about the little guy, some problems with claims of the little guy. Roberts, are you going? They asked me, are you going to be for the little guys? Well, in the Constitution's for the little guy, I'll be with the little guy. But there was another book called God the Economist, which is by. It's terrible. I thought, oh, this would be an economic book about like God and economics. But it turns out it was from a theology professor. In the beginning, says I'm not an economist, and it's like, and after reading the first 30 pages, it's pretty clear, right? Because he talks about this idea of scarcity shouldn't exist. It's not. There's no scarcity in God's kingdom. But you know, we're not in God's kingdom, right? We're in the real world here. There is scarcity. So, equality, you know, there's no equality in the Bible. It's like the man, the landowner that hired people in the morning, he paid him one shekel. He hired people in the afternoon, he paid him one shekel, and he hired people in the evening, he paid him one shekel. They worked different hours, so their hourly wage was drastically different. They got the same amount, and people that came in the morning complained that they were getting the same amount. It's unfair. He said, well, yeah, but that's what you agreed to, right?
Okay.
And the landowner is not condemned for paying in any unequal wage. He's saying, basically, this is the market. This is how the market works, supply and demand, right? I need people in the morning. I pay a certain wage, and I can get a number of people. Now, if I want more people, I have to pay them more money. So, you've got disciples on 12 thrones. Do we all get our own 12 thrones? I don't think so. Right? So, you've got inequality in the Bible. You know, that's why we shouldn't listen to it, because it's not fair. Parable of talents. You know, the wealthy vineyard owner in Matthew. Rewards are distributed. Some people are just going to come through with their skin of their teeth. Now, more specifically, kind of, I mentioned this one, why libertarians need God, why... Honestly, got it. This is a quote by him. Mises and Rand believe free enterprise and Christianity were irreconcilable. So that was their view of it. I have a few people here, Austrian atheists, Mises, Rand, Rothbard, in there. I think it cuts off. I think on your slide you have some of the Christians.
I recall reading that one of the reasons that Rand was so much of an atheist is that when she was growing up in the Soviet Union, she saw the church basically doing nothing.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people that believe that.
That is potentially part of it.
Yeah,
I'm a fan. I listen to Stephen Molyneux online. He grew up in a church, and his mother was a horrible, right? Like, really abused him, I think, but nobody did anything. And he saw that as a problem, and that kind of drove him away from the faith. But as he's seen kind of the way atheists view the world, he's more like, look, he talks about if you're in a tennis match and you're, you know, playing tennis against somebody and somebody starts bombing your court, you're going to run over and the guy that you were competing with, that you were sort of a type of enemy with, you're going to get together and you're going to try to fight against the big problem, right? So he has agreed that Christianity is not the problem, at least not today. Right, the problem is the other side of all these things. So, anyways, Mises So as far as specifically economics and free choice foundation, Mises looked at man as a rational creature that can act according to his own goals. That was in a biography by Huggins on Mises. What is free will? Got the definition there. And actually, I like the definition. Absolutely commonly used thing, the rational appetite, full exercise through light of reason. So reason's very important in free will, right? That's what we were talking about, man versus the animals. What separates man from the animals? Man is an animal if you're an atheist, right? All these things like reason and choice and all these things suddenly exploded, popped into thin air, out of thin air, popped into existence at I don't know when. Theistic evolution, you know, same thing, right? Just all of a sudden, boom, all these things existed. So man was a cell, and then he was two cells, and then he was four cells, and da-da-da. And at some point, he became valuable. You know, where was that point? I don't know. But, so, C.S. Lewis talks about free will. Are you free if you can't choose to be evil? In order to make things, so Dr. Lennox, capacity to love, they must have the capacity to hate. So these are all ideas on free will. Critical to our choice to freedom and autonomy. Dawkins, you know, says there is no such thing as free will, DNA. Of course, at the same time, he's saying how evil Christianity and religion are. They're terrible. So, people choose to be terrible, but they can't choose. Yeah, they're all programmed. So, you know, DNA just is, right?
Yep.
We dance to its music. We do what DNA tells us. Sam Harris is famous. There's not a cell in your body, in your brain, etc. He's got a whole book on why you're not free and why you should choose to be different, right, than you are.
Choice?
Yeah.
You can't choose.
Yeah, exactly. And why religion is poisonous, and that's why you should choose. You can't choose. There's no such thing as free will, but you should choose to not be religious, right?
Yeah, because you can't choose.
You can't choose. But on the other hand, right now, one of the biggest questions out there in mind science is they don't understand how consciousness even works or where it comes from.
Yeah, and that's a big question in science and really in philosophy as well. Right? Now, the problem is a lot of, like Dawkins, people have said that we've kept, some of the philosophers said, look, we kept up with his and Hawkins, too. I forget which one. But, oh, I think it was Hawkins said philosophy is dead.
Yeah, it was awful.
And people, Ronnie Zacharias said the Christians didn't have to do anything. The philosophers went, look, we've kept up with your field fairly well, and you haven't even bothered to read anything in our field. I just say philosophy is dead and then write a book about more. It wasn't just a book about science, but it was a worldview. It's expressing a worldview, a philosophical worldview. But there is no such thing as philosophy, so how can you get into that? So, you know, some other things here. This is by Francis Crick. He's the
math of DNA.
Yeah, Bertrand Russell. He talks about. He also has another quote about, you know, here, your motor car. No man treats a motor car as foolishly as he treats another human being. When it doesn't go, he's not going to tell him, hey, I'm not going to put petrol on you unless you go. But he sees humans as basically machines, right? And so you don't talk to your machine and tell him, hey, look, you should really do this. You just understand your machine, you put food in the kid's mouth, and he runs as his machine is supposed to. But nobody can live that way. So even the atheist, there was an atheist, I forget if it's in there or not, but he says he, in the classroom, he tells people, look, nobody's free, and you can't yada yada. But then he goes home, and he tells his kids, and he gets mad at them when they don't act as he tells them, as they should, because he thinks they had a choice to choose to behave well. But then he goes back to work and says, you can't choose, right? So nobody can live consistently with this worldview. The mind. There was an episode, Lou Rockwell, the Mises Institute. This is a good episode here. He talked about Free Minds, Free Markets of Reason magazine. And they talk about free mind, right? It's the atheistic worldview that you're a free mind. But if they're consistent, there is no such thing as the mind. There's just the brain, right? The mind is this thing separate that we believe is separate from the brain, controls the brain, and that's where choices are made in the mind. And Dr. Phil talks about the studies by the Penfield studies where they're poking on the brain. And yes, the brain controls motor functions, but what controls the brain? right? You got an outside force poking on the brain, you're lifting your arm up and stuff, and people are saying, you made my arm go up, right? But what is it, if that guy's not there poking, what is it that makes the brain do these things? So, we talked about the mind is immaterial dualism, the mind separate from the brain. They believe the mind is the same thing. They say you can find everything with the five senses, you know, use the five senses to show me the mind, but you can't. Dr. Phil talks about, can you weigh a thought? Yes, you can, from a purely materialistic worldview, but then at the same time, you're talking about the bad thoughts that you had, right? And so here I have, this is a thing on Sam Harris, but I think it's really the new atheist, you've got the new atheist young people, like, looking for some kind of something from science to tell us what's right and wrong, but really, he's bringing in these hidden moral assumptions, right? There is such a thing as good and evil, but if there's such a thing as evil, then there's good, there's a moral law, if there's a moral law, there's a moral lawgiver, but, you know, you need something outside of us to have that, to give us that moral law. C.S. Lewis, mistake there.
Problem with the idea, if it can't be measured with the five senses, is the realization there's more than five senses. And that's been scientifically proven, that human beings are aware of more things than just the five senses.
Well, that's what we're talking about, the mind. There's things that are not in the physical universe. You know, there are ideas that don't exist. So Doc talks about infinity, and you teach math.
Yes.
And I just talk about infinity. You've got the number of points between 1 and 2 is half as many as the number of points between 1 and 3. Right? Yet it's the same size. It's both double and the same size. They're both infinite, yet, right? So it's a contradictory, but it's because these things, they're just ideas. Mm-hmm. They don't actually exist in the real world. The idea that if you can, Zeno's paradox, I think you can only go halfway. But watch, I will transgress from here to there, and I can go beyond that. But if I could only go halfway and halfway and halfway, I would never actually get there. Asymptotic, right? But almost out of time, so... Darwin on reason. Does reason evolve? And here I have, here we go. So reason is he called it as lily white as something or other. It's a European, Euro-Christian construct. I think it's on
that.
It's kind of cut off.
John D. Caputo?
John D. Caputo.
Okay.
Should be in your
flyer.
But it's cut off on here. Yeah. Doc Socks, he gives, I forget who did it, but the idea of the woman on the train to Scotland, right? And so you have the rock saying, welcome to Scotland. Mm-hmm. She can believe that they just accidentally rolled there, in which case she has no reason to believe that. It's like reason. If reason just popped up out of nowhere. Some people say, oh, reason just works. That's why it's good. Reason doesn't really exist. It just works. It's something a tool we use. This guy says reason's just a white supremacist belief system, right? So it's just ridiculous, crazy ideas. But where did reason come from? Animals don't have reason like we do. Does a single cell have a reason? So where did it come from? It couldn't have existed. And things don't exist outside of us, the physical world, right? So when there was one cell, did reason exist? That one cell doesn't know reason. So where did it come from, right? So... And reason is it's a basis of economic action. You know, we believe that there is no knowledge without reason. So it gets later in the slides. So let's get into this. There you go. C.S. Lewis, all possible knowledge depends on the validity of human reasoning. Here's Father, what we call rights, human rights, life, liberty, property, property rights, ownership of land, I own myself, you know. Atheists say rights come from the fact that I own myself. So, well, not if I own you. And then, you don't have this, what are you talking about, this natural right of self-ownership? Sorry, I just don't understand that at all from a purely materialistic worldview. So, that was just going through those last few pretty quick. But, again, the basic is there is no... In fact, I don't think I had it. Yeah, I added it, and apparently I had the wrong one. But there's a book called Choice, and it's a rewording of human action, which again is the basis of economic, of Mises' book, Human Action, Basis for Austrian Economics Today. And Bob Murphy, who is a Christian, or a self-proclaimed Christian, he called the book Choice. Now, where do you get the idea from? Now, he's not a naturalist, but if you are a naturalist, where do you get this title, choice? There's no such thing as choice. So your book, Human Action and Choice, are the basis of your economic worldview, yet it doesn't exist in a purely materialistic world. There's no such thing as choice because, again, you are just a meat machine. You don't have rights. You're talking about rights. Because rights because I exist. Well, dogs exist. Trees exist. Cows exist. Yeah, we're probably going to, some of you are going to go eat one. So, right? So why not eat people? You get into all kinds of, the libertarian view of don't hurt people, don't take their stuff. Where are you getting these ideas that you shouldn't hurt people? Oh, it's bad for society. Well, what do I care? Stalin didn't care.
Exactly.
Hitler didn't care. He cared about himself. He hurt people, he took their stuff. What are you telling him? There's some kind of natural law that says he shouldn't do that? So, time's up. So, any questions? Okay.